Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
More reaction now from the state of Colorado as the community of Aurora, suburb of Denver, copes with the grief and the aftermath of the shooting on Friday at that premiere of the Batman movie that resulted in 12 dead and nearly 60 people injured. Joining us now is Nathan Heffel, reporter for KUNC in Denver, Colorado. Nathan, so we've got a court appearance today, it looks like, for James Holmes.
That's right. Yeah, he is supposed to appear in Arapahoe County District Court today. And this will be the first time, of course, the public will be able to actually see the alleged shooter.
And the chief of police there in Aurora had a lot to say about how Holmes was all lawyered up, I believe was one of the quotes, and that he's not speaking to authorities at all. They haven't questioned him at all. Any insights there?
It appears that he has a public defender, actually, that was appointed for him. And from all reports, he is not currently cooperating with authorities.
And any suspicion as to whether this will be a full arraignment in this court appearance? Will there be discussion of charges? Certainly, we've heard that first-degree murder is one of the charges that prosecutors intend to go with, which, of course, carries a death penalty, a possible death penalty in the state of Colorado.
This is essentially the announcement of his initial rights. He'll be in court, I'm assuming, for just a few moments. From there, it takes about 72 hours for the prosecution to officially formulate any charges. They could do that any time within the next 3 days.
Where does the community of Aurora stand? The memorial services over the weekend, we all saw the heartbreaking pictures and testimony from people describing what happened and who actually is lost as a result of this shooting.
The state truly is in shock still. This, of course, is the first day that people are returning to work after the tragedy on Friday. Thousands turned out for yesterday's vigil for the victims of this mass shooting. But really, there hasn't been a lot of anger, per se, but really a lot of a sense that people want to show that Colorado is a strong state, that Colorado will come together in times of adversity. Of course, we've had tragedy throughout the summer, from wildfires to other events that really have placed us on edge.
And for you personally, Nathan, I mean, this is quite a lot. I mean, I heard stories over the weekend of people from Columbine reaching out to the people of Aurora. There's a real sense of communal emotion here. I'm wondering if you're part of it.
I think when you're covering something like this, you always have to kind of detach yourself from the emotion. But it is tough because I'm a member of this community. And you know, friends of friends of friends know people who were affected by this shooting. So it's very tough to not be taken aback by the tragedy that happened in Aurora. And to think about, you know, going to a movie theater, this could have happened anywhere in the country. And it's definitely a trying time for people here in the state.
Nathan Heffel, reporter for KUNC in Denver, Colorado. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The language strains, as Nathan helps us to understand, to adequately describe what happened last week in Aurora, Colorado, even as these mass shooting events feel more familiar in the United States. But the words mass killing don't seem to really tell us much. These are individuals declaring war on something, using assault rifles in this particular case, but there's no real war except in the mind of the shooters, we learn. A year ago yesterday, Anders Breivik killed 77 people in Norway. Norway struggled with what to call this monster. Mass murderer worked for a while, but when authorities uncovered Breivik's anti-Islamic manifesto and later Breivik was afforded 5 days of xenophobic court testimony, Breivik had a cause and became, in the words of Norwegians, a terrorist. And that's what Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper referred to alleged Aurora shooter James Holmes as yesterday, a terrorist, on NBC's Meet the Press and then again on CNN's State of the Union.
You know, in a funny way, this guy is a terrorist, right? He wasn't a terrorist in the sense of politics, but for whatever twisted reasons that we can barely even imagine, he wanted to create terror, right? He wanted to put fear into people's lives.
Does terrorism apply here? Does it help in any way? Joining us now is Anthony Lemieux, a social scientist who studies terrorism. He's a professor at Emory University and Georgia State University and an investigator with the National Center for the Study of Terrorism and Responses to Terrorism at the University of Maryland. Professor, thanks for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you for having me.
So, Anthony, you can hear the Colorado governor there struggling to find a kind of clarity, and there's almost a sense of relief using the term terrorist. Here is an individual who wants to create terror and put fear in people's lives. The word terrorist seems to work here.
Well, I think in the sense of providing some kind of closure or an understanding of what's going on here, you know, the term terrorist is used, you know, is used often in a delegitimizing, pejorative sense, and you know, that kind of cuts across space and time. In this case, you know, the tactics involved, the kind of seemingly at random victims, the methods and such were really consistent with what we might see in a terrorist attack. I think until we know more about, you know, the underlying motivations to see if it really fits a more classic definition of the term, you know, I think we still need to understand a little bit more that will fall out from these investigations.
Are you disqualified as a terrorist if you simply take your internal personal anger and embrace somebody else's cause and end up causing the same kinds of death that we saw in this particular case? Or do you have to be united in some sort of team effort, to use, for lack of a better term, a team effort like Al-Qaeda?
Well, no, and there's definitely, you know, the lone wolf aspect of terrorism that we need to be concerned with. And one of the challenges there is when people are operating individually, as may be the case here, again, I think a lot of this remains to be seen with the investigation, that, you know, people are doing things that may not get the attention of authorities or law enforcement in a way that it might if there were more people involved. But no, certainly, you know, lone wolf terrorism is something we need to be very mindful of and concerned with.
Talking with Anthony Lemieux, a social scientist who studies terrorism at Emory University and Georgia State University. Let's talk about Ted Kaczynski for a moment. But for his manifestos and elaborate kind of intellectual underpinnings for the bombings that he produced and the death that he caused, he would have just been a nutcase in a cabin somewhere. Does the word terrorism enshrine the activities of a mad criminal here?
Well, you know, again, it's a very slippery definition, and this is one of the things I think in the academic and policy communities and defense communities and law enforcement that people really are trying to, I think, you know, kind of revisit from time to time what we're really getting at here, this underlying phenomena. But I think in both cases, in the Kaczynski case and here, there was clear, what it seems to be clear evidence of very planful calculation. Now, in Kaczynski's case, you know, the manifesto, this kind of anti-technology, idiosyncratic approach he had really pushed it into that more classic defining characteristics of terrorism. So I think that, you know, we look at the actions, and one of the things that really is important in understanding terrorism is getting at some of those underlying motivations. You know, what is this violence purported to be about? And, you know, and then we kind of break it down further from there.
Police officers who arrested James Holmes suggested that he might have referred to himself as the Joker, the villain, of course, in one of the villains in the Batman universe. For someone to embrace a movie character like this, is that a whole different category outside of terrorism and even outside of mass murder?
Well, I think in this particular instance with the Joker as the specific reference point, one of the things that was interesting about the Joker character for those who are familiar with the movie and the story, the Joker was really dedicated to simply mayhem and anarchy. So there was no real cause behind his action other than to inflict harm, inflict casualties, and to create chaos and pandemonium. So I think that in this case, you know, we'll have to see. But he certainly did get attention, a lot of attention, and is continuing to get attention. I mean, after all, we're here right now talking about this. So on the one hand, one of the goals of I think, people who commit this kind of mass casualty violence in general, and terrorists for sure, is often to generate a real public interest and attention, you know, to draw that attention towards something. Now, here we'll have to see if the attention was just to be drawn towards the self or if there's some other, you know, other cause that pops up here. But
certainly a lot of people who take a gun into a movie theater or into a civilian location like this are looking for attention in some sense. But you're absolutely right. It's speculative now. It's unclear if the word terrorism helps us or shields us from understanding what went on in James Holmes' mind. Anthony Lemieux, thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.